Is this the way to Brooklyn's radio? Hi, my name is Tony Christie, and you're listening to Suzanne Hunter on the World of Arts and Entertainment.
Now, it's a real delight to welcome onto the show legendary singer Tony Christie. Lovely to speak to you, Tony.
Nice to speak to you, Suzanne.
Now, the fans will be delighted to know that you're indeed back on the road again with a new show.
Mm-hmm.
But before we talk a little bit more in depth about that and the new album, I'd just like to touch on some of your major successes to date.
Yeah.
Now, the famous song, Is This the Way to Amarillo, is all about getting to a specific destination.
Yeah.
But when did you become aware that you wanted to point your compass, so to speak, towards the music world?
I started out as a little boy. My family were very, very musical. My grandparents came over from Ireland, and they played in a ceilidh band. My grandmother played the violin or fiddle, and my grandfather played the squeeze box. And my actual father, Paddy, he played the piano, and from an early age, he used to encourage me to sing, and particularly when my aunts and uncles and grandparents came to visit. He would sit at the piano and I would sing, and they would give me sixpence. So I learned at a very early age, I'd be about five or six then, that by singing you could make a living.
A little bit of money motivation.
That was my motivation to carry on.
I was wondering, I was going to say, because obviously you do have this ancestry, you know, with your grandparents in that ceilidh band. Do you feel that sort of singing gene was passed on in your DNA?
Oh, definitely. I mean, as a kid, I was every wedding I went to seemed to be, they were always very Irish weddings, because Irish people seem to stick together and they intermarry. And so every wedding I went to, they were very very Catholic weddings and involved a lot of Irish music. So it was in my genes, I suppose. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, talking about movement of singing and that sort of thing, is that you work with songwriter and producer team Mitch and Murray, and also with Jack White, the producer. Did you find you were all quite a dream team?
Well, Mitch is still alive, by the way. Mitch Murray is still alive, mm-hmm. But he was in partnership with Peter Callender, who very sadly passed away a couple of years ago. So they were my producers and writers. Jack White, that came along in 1980, I think it was. And I started, that was in Germany. He was a very famous German producer. In fact, he produced Engelbert Humperdinck, and he produced David Hasselhoff. When I was with Jack White, we were both signed, David Hasselhoff and myself were both signed to him. And Hasselhoff did very well out of it, and so did I. I saw millions of albums, particularly in Germany, produced by Jack White.
Yeah, do you find Germans a very loyal audience? Do you enjoy playing in Germany?
They have been. I've been going there for 40-odd years, yeah.
Mm.
From 1970-ish. So, and they're very loyal, and I do a lot there. In fact, I'm doing two major tours in January, February, March and April.
Oh, brilliant.
Two different tours. They've remained very loyal over the years.
Mm, yeah, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you were with Mitch and Murray and with that team, is that when you entered Eurovision, the Eurovision Song Contest?
It was around about that time in the 70s, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the song that I did was a great song, Queen of the Mardi Gras.
Yes.
We did the auditions all out, or the trying to win the English or the UK section of it to get through, which was held at the Albert Hall. And during rehearsals, all the acts were on there, and we were sitting in the stalls and listening, and people coming on and doing their bits. And then Brotherhood of Man came on and did their song, and we all looked at each other and said, "That's it, we've lost." That was just the rehearsal. It was just instant hit, you could say. That's the winner. That's going to win the whole competition.
Yeah, but then Queen of the Mardi Gras went on to sell over 10 million copies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like a lot of these competitions, isn't it? It's what happens afterwards that really counts. How did you find the whole experience?
Terrifying, to be honest. You know, when you're in a it's a sing-off, basically, isn't it? Everybody was very, very nervous, because I think a lot of everybody thought, well, your livelihood and your career's resting on this one competition. I mean, luckily, I'd had a few hits before that, so I was established, if you like, and so I wasn't I was disappointed not to win, but I mean, I did hold my hand up and think, you know, I lost to the better song. Kisses for Me is going to win the whole thing. It's going to win Eurovision, which it did, of course.
As you say, you're no stranger to the big chart successes, and particularly with a song written by Neil Sedaka,
exactly.
The hugely popular Is This the Way to Amarillo?
Mm.
Now, for a song is only half as good with the words, and for me, and thousands of others, I'm sure will agree, your vocals are just completely unmatchable on that song. What was it that attracted you to that song?
Well, I was very fortunate that my manager at the time, he went over to New York, and I just had three big hits in the UK. He was with Sedaka in his apartment, and he said, "Have you got any?" He played him one of my songs. He says, "I've got this singer, Tony Christie." He says, "Do you have any songs for him?" And he said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, look." And he sat at the piano and played about five or six songs, and then he played Amarillo. So my manager said, "Why the hell didn't you play Amarillo first?" He says, "That's the obvious hit." He says, "Oh, do you think so?" He says, "Well, I didn't play it first because it's not finished." He says, what do you mean it's not finished? He says, well, all that shalala business. He says, we're trying to work on the lyric for that. So my manager says, no, forget lyric. That's the bit, the shalala bit. So he finished up sending, he brought back two songs for me from Sedaka, which was Amarillo and Solitaire, which I recorded the two songs on the same session. My idea was to put Solitaire out because I thought that was the better song. But of course, when the session was over and we listened to the finished product, it was obvious that Is This the Way to Amarillo was the big hit pop song. So they put that out, and then I tried to persuade my record label to put out Solitaire to follow it, and they said, no, it's a ballad. And so they wouldn't put it out, so it just went on the album.
Solitaire's beautiful, the definitive Tony Christie collection, I love it. And, I mean, Solitaire's a lovely song, but Amarillo, it's like you said, that shalalas, it's that call and response, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
It's the sing-along bit, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? It's brilliant. Oh, it's a great insight. I mean, I'm a fan of Peter Kay's comedy Phoenix Nights, and I always remember the scene of Max and Paddy in their van singing along to Is This the Way to Amarillo.
Yeah.
Had you been a fan of the show, and if not, how did you feel about it?
At the time I was living in Spain. My wife and I were living in Spain for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we got all the TV programs, and I used to watch it because it reminded me of the early '60s when I was doing the clubs, you know. And when I saw that, you know, I thought, well, that's nice, you know. And I forgot about it then. But I was talking to Peter Kay about it, and he said, originally, he said we had two songs in mind to use on that particular section. He says, and one was Amarillo, and the other one was Shakin' Stephen. One of Shakin' Stephen, I think it was a Green Door or something like that. He says, but the problem was Paddy couldn't remember the words for the Shakin' Stephen song. He says, but of course anybody can remember Shalala. So he said, we finished up using Amarillo. So because of Paddy McGuinness not being able to remember the words, that's how I got to be, you know, Peter to use it.
Brilliant. The shalalas won out.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever imagine that Amarillo would take on such a new life after Peter Kay with the charity single?
Well, because originally it was a hit in 1971, and that, we're talking about 2005 now. And as I said, I was living in Spain, and because of the success of it, actually, I was over promoting an album that they brought out, the definitive collection, and Universal said, we'll only put the album out if you come back to the UK and do a tour to promote it. So I said, okay. So I came back, and my son organized a tour of about 35, 40 days or something. And it wasn't until halfway through the tour that I got the phone call from Peter Kay saying, I'm going to use Amarillo on my Comic Relief video. Would you like to be on the video? I said, sure. You know, it's my song. Should be on the video, really. So I finished my night at the whatever theatre I was at, got a train down to London, and did my bit on the treadmill, and then went back on tour. I think I was in New York or somewhere. And it went out on the Friday night, and it just went, and Sunday went to number one. My album, which was number three in the charts at the time, Of course, it dragged my album to number one. And 15 years of being away from the UK and not working in the UK, I suddenly had a number one single and a number one album.
So it really
changed my life, and it's the reason why I'm back in the UK living here, you know.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? Because, of course, it was so popular, number one album, and the download charts as well, wasn't it?
Yes,
so it's just phenomenal, really. But, I mean, talking about, how was that treadmill experience?
it was over so quickly. I thought it was a rehearsal, but no. I, first of all, he made me wear his suit, because I got a beautiful Savile Row suit to wear. And he said, no, that's too posh. He said, yeah, no, you wear this. And it was Peter Kay's suit. Purple suit, you know, he's about 3 stone heavier than me. So I finished up having to put his suit on with braces because the pants get falling down, and with bulldog clips all down the back to make it look at least half decent, you know, and wear his purple shirt as well. So, and I put it on and went on the treadmill and went through, and then I said, thank you. And I said, is that it? Yeah. I said, wasn't that a rehearsal? No, that was it. So that was it. I got the suit off, got on the train, and went back on the theatre tour. So that was it.
The glamorous behind-the-scenes stories, eh?
Yeah.
The bulldog clips and everything. Brilliant. You're no stranger to charity singles, obviously that particular charity single, but also you did a song called Steal the Sun for Help for Heroes.
Yeah, for Help the Afghan Heroes, yeah.
Yeah. What was it about that particular charity? How did it all come about?
To a friend of mine who was friends with a couple from Somerset whose boy was killed in Afghanistan, and I sort of did the song. It was from an album that I made, and he played it to them, and they were setting up this charity, and they said, can we use it for the charity? I said, yes, of course. So we did, you know, the filming and all that kind of business to try and raise it. It raised quite a few £1,000, you know. So it did very well. Very sad song.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's lovely to sort of do that again, though, isn't it, for a great cause?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, talking of fans of your work, it wasn't just Peter Kay, but I understand that back in 1999, Jarvis Cocker wrote a song for you, Walk Like a Panther. Did he share with you what it was about your vocal quality that made him want to have you on that song?
Well, first of all, I was, again, living in Spain, and he contacted my sister-in-law, who lived in Sheffield, and got to me through her. And he rang and said, I've written a song for you, and it's called Walk Like a Panther. And I said, but hang on a minute. I said, my first album, which I did with Mitch Murray and Peter Callender, had a song on there called Walk Like a Panther. It's not the same song, is it? He says, no. No, he says, but I got the idea for the song because I had that album. I was a fan, you know. He said, I had the album. So he said, but I've written a modern-day version of it. Which, he sent it to me, which is very, very quirky. And so I did it. I did it with a couple of disc jockeys and arrangers, record producers, who they called themselves the All-Seeing Eye. So it went out as Walk Like a Panther by the All-Seeing Eye, featuring Tony Christie. That's how the thing went out. And I flew back to the UK to do it, and then just flew back to Spain, and then went on this German tour, and just completely forgot about it until I got, again, same thing, halfway through the tour, I got a phone call from my son saying that song that you weren't sure about has just gone top 10 in the British charts.
Seems to be a thread, doesn't it, in your life? Do it, forget about it, have a number one. Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah.
No, it's good that it didn't put too much attention, because suddenly some things happen, don't they, without you even knowing.
Yeah,
oh, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
I mean, talking about, you have such a, for me, such a rich, velvety, dramatic quality to your voice. So I guess it's no surprise to learn that you've been involved in musical theatre. You voiced Magaldi in the original Evita recording, and more recently, you appeared in Bill Kenwright's production of Dreamcoats and Petticoats.
That's right, yes. Mm. I did about 3 years ago, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, I did Dreamboats in the West End.
Yeah.
And it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And used the opportunity of 4 months in the West End. My wife and I lived it up, and we stayed at the Groucho for all that time. And my wife fell in love with Soho. She said she felt safer there than anywhere in the world.
Really? No, no, it's nice, isn't it? Grand shows, you know, it's good. It's all cosy, isn't it? And friendly.
Yeah,
so, yeah, lovely stuff. I mean, as well as your roles on stage, your song Avenues and Alleyways was used for the popular TV show The Protectors.
You've appeared
on TV shows as well.
Yeah.
Now, would I be making a bit of an assumption here in saying that being born in a Yorkshireman, it was quite special to maybe appear in Emmerdale, being set in that neck of the woods?
Yes, I did it because my mum is a big Emmerdale fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that appearing in Emmerdale meant more to her than me having a number one record.
Classic.
And again, I was in the middle of the tour, and they just said, will you do it? I had 2 days rest, supposedly rest.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up to, I think it was Ilkley or somewhere in the beautiful part of Yorkshire.
Mm.
I did it up there. And just basically enjoyed it and did it for my mum.
Yeah, oh, that's nice, isn't it? It's like Peter Kay with his mother, isn't it? You know, mum wants a bungalow. I mean, going from Yorkshire to Irish connections. And once again, you know, Peter Kay, the comedian, has the Irish mother, we know.
Yeah, she's Belfast, isn't she?
Yeah, that's right. And you've got another, obviously, you had another very special Paddy in your life, mm-hmm. a man called Paddy Fitzgerald. Am I right in thinking the new album, The Irish Songbook, is dedicated to his memory?
It is, yeah, it is, because for years and years and years, through all the success that I had, because he was an accountant, and I think he was a little bit disappointed because he wanted me to go down the same route. So I went along with him, and I got a job in an office, and I worked, and I went to night school and day school. But unfortunately, my worst subject at school was mathematics. But I just went along with it. And I always thought that he never really, you know, was never proud of me, anything I did. And it wasn't until he died in 2000 that I came back from Spain to help with my mum and my brother, to help, you know, clear the house and do all the bits that you have to do it, you know. And I opened this drawer, and this big drawer was absolutely cram-packed with memorabilia, everything I'd ever done from the 60s, from the workingmen's clubs to the nightclub scenes, all the records I ever made, all the write-ups I ever got in the papers, were all in this drawer. And I didn't think he cared about it, you know. So it really, really, really grabbed me, that. And so I thought, okay. And when I made this Irish album of Celtic songs, I decided to dedicate it to my dad.
Oh, that's lovely. I mean, some people don't actually say, do they, sometimes? But
no.
that spoke a millions, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, what childhood memories have come back to you whilst writing the songs for the new album, The Irish Songbook?
Well, they're all old, very traditional Irish songs.
Oh, I see.
Hundreds of years old, some of them, you know.
Mm.
200-300 years old.
Yes.
They're very traditional songs.
Yes.
The memories are that I knew the tunes because of the Irish weddings I went to. But I didn't know, of course, the lyrics. I had to sort of learn the lyrics, or try to learn the lyrics. And funnily enough, I mean, I'm English, born in Yorkshire. I did an album with an Irish group, and we made it, did the album in Northeim in Germany, in a studio which is underneath a monastery. You know, the big cellars underneath the monastery, I think, would have been full of beer or something at one time. So it was quite weird how it came about.
It's almost quite international in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's been so successful that we're already planning and listening to very old Irish songs, because there's thousands of them.
Oh, yes.
And for volume two of the Great Irish Songbook.
Oh, brilliant, right. I mean, you've got a new single out, which I'm going to play in just a while, and it's called Star of the County Down.
Yeah, that's one of the up-tempo ones, yeah.
Yeah, is that based on a person or a place in particular?
If you listen to the Irish songs, the story songs, a lot of them are very poignant, very sad, and, you know, about lost love and people dying and people going to America and grieving over somebody, wanting to get back to Ireland and all this kind of stuff.
Mm.
So they're all story songs.
Yes.
The weirdest one was about this. They found this ship which had disappeared in 1700 and whatever it was. Two ships looking for the Northwest Passage to Canada, and these two ships, sailing ships, got bogged down in the ice, and slowly sank and disappeared completely. And whilst we were doing the album, that was one of the songs, Lord Franklin, which was based on letters from his wife trying to find out where he was, what's happened to him. And in those days, offering £10,000 reward for anybody with information that can find him. And in the event they found it a year ago. They found Erebus, the ship that he was the captain of. And we were deciding at the time whether to do the song or not, because I'd never heard of the song, and neither had the Irish band that I was working with. But it was the German producer Gunther who said, "Try this song. He says, I think it's a good song for you." And that's how we did it. So we thought it was an omen that we heard on the radio whilst we were planning the song, listened to the radio as well. And they said, "We found that the Erebus, the Lord Franklin's ship, has been found in the ice. Hundreds of feet below the ice."
Yeah, it's a case of never give up, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So they all died, everyone. Oh. I think eventually they tried to reach land and died, and it reverted to cannibalism and all sorts of stuff.
Oh,
and it was a terrible, terrible story.
Oh my word! Oh, it's gonna be a few tears.
Yeah.
During the show, isn't it? Oh my goodness! I mean, now if I'm starting off in the Counterbeats group before going solo, you've never stopped through the decades. So I guess it was really nice to go back to your roots on this new album.
Yeah. I mean, in the show I do now. I do a song from the 60s that I used to sing in the Counterbeats, and I was in a group called the Trackers as well. The Counterbeats is where I got my name from. I was seen by the manager, because they had a singer who left. They had a girl singer. They were professional. I was working in office and just singing at weekends. Their manager had heard me, and their singer left because she made a record which was number one in the charts, and so she went solo. And they had a full book of bookings, and they didn't have a singer. So he persuaded me, their manager, to hand my notice in at the factory and go on the road, which I did.
Yeah.
And that's how I he says, "What's your name?" I said, "I know you're called Tony." He says, what's your second name? I said, "Fitzgerald." He said, "Don't know." He says, "That's no good for a pop singer." So I went to, we were doing a week round Leicester, and went to the picture and saw a film called Darling, starring Julie Christie.
Julie Christie, yeah.
And I was about 18 at the time, and became quite smitten with her, and decided that I liked the girl and I liked the name.
Oh,
so I call myself Tony Christie.
I didn't know that. That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very often the cinema has a lot to do with people changing their names, isn't it?
Oh,
Michael
yeah.
Caine and what have you, the Caine Mutiny and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, interesting. Now, of course, the great thing is for fans, they can get to hear the new album performed on your current tour, and you're going to be stopping off at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon on the 3rd of November. Are you looking forward to sharing that new material, and will the past songs also be something
in
there
as
well?
My old stuff as well. I did the first half with Ranagrai and introduced about 5 or 6 of the songs from the album on there, and then we take a break, and then my band come on, and we do my normal show, and then the second half. It's quite a long show, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of very, everything's packed in there.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, it sounds absolutely brilliant. I'm sure it's going to be an absolutely great show, performed by a true star, can I say.
Thank you.
And I wish you every success with the tour and the new album.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks so much for being a guest on Suzanne's World of Arts and Entertainment.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
Thank you. And that was my very special guest, Tony Christie.
Brooklyn's Radio. Loving arts and entertainment.